P-E-N-N-E-Y, Logan Kennedy. She should be added, she should be a member of the UA.
I would like to welcome Casey back to the committee, first meeting of the year, and hopefully by the next meeting, which will be the Wednesday after fall break, will be fully staffed, and that of course will not happen, but I am optimistic nonetheless. First thing on our agenda is approval of the minutes. Would any of you like to review the May 9th minutes again?
I think she read the minutes.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent on approving the minutes? With that, the May 9th, 2018 minutes have been approved.
I do have some help for the next one.
And it's not committee procedure to approve them the day that they're presented?
If they bring it up in with a day or so notice, so in this case, I'd say probably table.
Okay.
But this, that is, I could say, that's the committee's choice.
If anybody has any comments on the September 12th minutes, we'll take those now and then we'll probably take them.
I actually have one, I should say. I will note on the second page, part B, section D. I held long conversations with the former leadership of the university assembly, not the student assembly.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's the thing I saw. And then I also said in the third line, he said the president could not only accept the resolution that presented his two items.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank
that's
you.
Why I have there.
Margaret, do you have
the
ability?
Yeah, thank you.
Then I'll give you this in the writing record. But the executive session part, I'm going to have. The minor change that the executive session was to discuss specific matters regarding the feedback the president provided regarding the code of conduct changes, not the committee operations. And then after discussion, I just had a summary form that JA was asked to.
I will present the first part and have no problem with the second part. Just a note here. Actually, I should have.
I think with that, Margaret, we'll request that you note that the judicial administrator was asked to leave the executive session. Does anybody have any comments on including what the committee discussed in the executive session?
The executive session directly confidential. The committee at the time said that this was adequate. The exact discussion that this does, we did discuss strategic matters regarding the committee. And going beyond that is, we certainly can do, but in terms of I think it does adequately summarize what we did. We're required to do our rules. What's just matters, and I don't think we need to go further than that discussing it. In terms of the second point, I mean, there's always just have noted that is what happened, and therefore, so it appropriate to have it noted in it.
We may amend that second point of feedback, where it says made a motion to move into executive session in 4-4. To discuss the feedback provided regarding the code of conduct changes, because it was based on the motion, not on the discussion during the executive session.
I have a problem. Thank you. I have that.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
I'll give it to you. Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on this?
Well, move to disable these minutes.
If there's no sense of that, the September 12th minutes will be tabled until the next meeting. With that, we will move to the discussion on Resolution 1, which was passed by this committee 2 weeks ago, presented to the University Assembly last week. It was intended that this resolution, no, I'm sorry, this was not passed by the committee.
It was
committed to this committee after going to the University Assembly. The intention of this resolution was to staff the vacant seats on the University Hearing and Review Board using the names that were chosen by this committee last year. Unfortunately, the names were not presented to the University Assembly in time to be staffed at the end of the previous assembly term. After much discussion in the University Assembly, it was decided that the University Assembly should not be able to act on the nomination provided by the Codes and Judicial Committee because they were provided the previous term. For those of you who do not have it, the language from the Code of Conduct regarding that process is here. If you'd like a copy, you should look that over. We are going to probably have to discuss now whether or not we have the power to pass this resolution now, and the University Assembly has the power to fill these vacant seats with full term appointments. Matt?
Thank you. I would say the UA, the UA is recommitted as there was nothing. Well, I guess it was sent to this committee for further discussion. There was no, in terms of, there was a bigger discussion. It was sent to the committee for further discussion. There was not much. The motion that I reported it was sent for discussion. There's nothing, no physical message that was sent along with it, but I think the UA definitely had a very vigorous debate. And we looked at, Michelle Harbat ended and said that she did not believe the UA had the authority to staff these members in the hearing board. We had a discussion about that, the resolution was recommitted. And on that, there was also discussion of would the UA executive committee be willing to give people a quote unquote emergency appointment on a temporary basis for the entire year. The UA executive committee met this afternoon, and we agreed unanimously that would be violating the code because an emergency appointment for a whole year is not an emergency and not on a temporary basis, and therefore exceeds the authority of the code. The executive committee restated that it believes we do have the authority, and also included in a copy, I brought copies of UA Resolution 1 from last year, which goes on, which in essence is a similar procedure where we actually needed to fill extra seats. So we had done the full process in the spring. We filled them. We eventually learned that due to resignations and people graduating who we didn't know were graduating, we need to pull more people. So Resolution 1 last year was add additional members to the boards, many of whom are still serving. So that is really, in essence, this has been in the past. A, when things get pushed, and also B, when additional people need to be confirmed. And the UA Executive Committee also is that believes that we do have the authority. I have a copy of the code is here, and I highlighted that. There are two parts that are highlighted, mentioning the emergency appointment on a temporary basis. And the second one, under 3B, is, and I quote, any appointment to fill a vacancy or to address an emergency shall become effective immediately. For lack of a better term, once the seats became vacant because they weren't staffed on June 1, we provided emergency appointments, and the seats are technically underlined seats are vacant. Therefore, it would appear that we have the authority. We've done so for many years. And again, this seems to give us the enabling language. The nomination language above, again, you can read it a number of ways. So this version, we've looked at revising in the past. But if you read it, it says, in essence, the faculty members are nominated by the dean of faculty. There's no qualifications on that. There's no idea when the dean of faculty must do it, when he may or may, or when he or she, sort of, like he may or may not do it. And UA has acted as necessary as it's come through. The next one is regarding, the next sentence is regarding other candidates. It just says that this is how applications are solicited, and they must be nominated to the University Assembly for its confirmation no longer later than the last regular meeting of the outgoing assembly. And I will, I know I see Michelle's after the speaker's list, so I'm sure she will articulate her interpretation, her understanding much better than I would, so I won't do that. But we believe it says, in essence, that that's a procedure for how new nominations are meant to be brought forward. If we were following a standard procedure for staffing, we believe you could either A, see it as they need to be nominated, the confirmation of the assembly is not necessarily required, but alternatively, we also see that even if that's required, because there are vacancies, 3B kicks in, that we can fill the vacancies as necessary. And I also went through the hearing and review board public records yesterday. I went through all of the public records, I want to say from 08 onwards, up to the ones that are most recent, in essence, in the mid-2000s, none of the records that I could see had ever formally mentioned concerns over the integrity of those who were staffed on the boards by the assembly. It's not historically has what we've done. And the UA executive committee, again, in our discussions, said that we believe that there are multiple ways to read it, one of which leads to what we think is a rational and historical result. The other one leads to is a response to an objection that we did not believe was warranting stretching our emergency authority to what we thought was a breaking point. We do certainly agree that as we move forward, look at the code holistically, this version we tried to change in the past, it really needs to be streamlined so we understand where the authority is. UA's bylaws to look at this in the past. But that is really, that's, I guess, an update on where the UA executive committee was. There's a long story short, we don't, the UA committee does not think, and of the opinion, that it's not appropriate for us to create an emergency fund for an entire year to reconfirm from the spring. In essence, gives a 3-year term and is not an emergency nor a temporary exit.
Or in front of Michelle, clarify to the committee the options before us now are to pass this resolution, have the university assembly staff those vacancies for the full regular 2-year term, or have the university assembly executive committee fill the vacancies on a temporary basis, would be the remainder of this year. But the third and final option would be to leave those seats vacant for the remainder of this year. I could put Michelle.
That's a basic point of information, or for who you want to second move to the correct. So that the UA executive committee has decided not that we will not do that.
So I guess the second option is not an option because the UA executive committee has declined. They will not staff those vacancies for an entire year. They believe that is a violation of the emergency powers grant. Michelle.
At the first few meetings, so it's always scary when you read the code of conduct because you're like, oh, what's going on with this? This is what happened with the JA code of conduct that you read and just historical practice that had been occurring doesn't mean that's the way that it's actually written. And so at the start of the UA, I went to the CJC chair and the UA chair and let them know that when I was reading this, part one where it says that the Code of Judicial Committee shall nominate candidates to the University Assembly for confirmation no longer than the last regular meeting of the office. And that didn't happen. The decoder key was provided in May 2nd. These things were not passed at that May 31st last waiver resolution. And so what I brought to the University Assembly, which was pretty divided, so they sent it back to the CJC, was that the way that I read this, and I wanted to get their feedback and also make their decision with that, is that to me that's a check on the system. That the outgoing, the UA 2018 could appoint as many people as they wanted to the UHRB 2019. But the UA 2019 only has the authority to appoint to the UHRB 2020. And I saw this as a check and balance. And I actually met with the JCCs on Friday, and they actually saw that as having kind of like, yeah, that's one of the checks and balances. So that's something I would bring in and consider. The part where it's part three where it talks about vacancies in the emergency appointments, I read that as being once a member is submitted to the board, if they have to vacate for some reason, then that's for the emergency powers or if there's an emergency. So I read it in the same way that the executive committee did. So when we looked at the number of faculty, staff, and students that were on the UHRB list that had appointments that did not expire, we're left with around 10 to 13 students, 10 to 13 faculty, and about 10 to 13 staff. That's a manageable number, actually, for the conduct proceeding to occur. So if the University Assembly or this committee says, you know, we agree that we think that this is a check on the system in which the University Assembly, I think it's prevent cherry picking of board members. That's honestly what I think it is that you want to have the authority to grant the previous assembly. And so we would have enough from a JA's perspective to do the conduct process that we'd need for hearing boards and review boards. There would be time, and let's say, so we have a lot of ILR students. So let's say maybe there was a high profile ILR student who was charged with code charges. There might be enough students who would need to recuse themselves. That my suggestion would be to pull the names of the students who are on that proposed resolution and then ask the executive committee to emergency appoint them for just that procedure. Again, this is something that is for this committee to decide, but I think that the important power of the University Assembly to follow the procedures that are outlined in the code is something that I've been transparent and advocating for, even if it's been detrimental to the process. And I've come to this committee, I'm very forthright, so that I read the code as it's written. And just because we've done past practices doesn't mean we need to keep doing things that were moving forward.
Can I just ask for some clarification? No. And maybe it's clear to everybody else reading it, but it isn't to me. First, were all of these nominations actually submitted to the University Assembly by the last regular meeting?
They were submitted to the university assembly before the last regular meeting of the academic assembly, but they were not confirmed at the university assembly.
What happened?
So the individuals were sent as essentially a list of numbers, which each number was assigned to an actual applicant. I'm still confused by the exact timeline, but the university assembly executive board, my understanding, was not able to receive the decoder key in time to put those names into a resolution from the numbers they had, the numbers that were nominated by our committee last spring. Have that community be voted on by the university.
Okay, so the actual name never came before the university assembly, only the code. And so nobody on the university assembly did anything with regard to the approval process of the actual people's names.
I'm going to the vote.
So I also have a question. That question is to the vote. What happened was it was presented to the UA exec. Towards the end of the end of May, after the final meeting, we had finally figured out who it was, and myself and Mr. Crosby, Craig Hoffman, the former chair, as well as members of the executive, former executive, talked about, okay, we're going to have an emergency appointment, and then you confirm this in the fall. It's not what we like to do, but we've got it in the past. So we have the name, we went through, we said, okay, as of May, or June 1, pardon me, I believe, something else, 12:20 a.m., we sent an email to my executive team saying, here are the names. Are you agree with giving an emergency appointment? So the prior executive committee knew them. Again, the code is quiet on nominations, but I won't talk about that now, I'll my time. But they were transmitted, the executive committee was aware of who it was prior to the end of the term. And I believe they may have had the names the day of the final meeting, by which time they did not.
The assembly.
No, it's not really public.
And so can I just ask a question again? What is the normal way in which the university assembly considers the nominations? Is it usually the whole, everybody on the university assembly, not just the executive committee that does the vote?
So normally following the way COSE works and the way the university assembly has tried to follow this procedure in the past, the resolution of this form would have been sent to the university assembly at a general meeting before the end of last semester.
Okay, so it's only the executive committee that has the names and then the university.
Before the end of it.
Okay.
Casey?
So follow-up question to that. So are the applications already reviewed? It's just the names that are not on there?
So these names are from the applications that our committee reviewed last semester.
But I mean, are the applications reviewed without the names?
The applications were reviewed were without the names. The decoder key was kept by the Office of the Assembly, who, according to the Code of Conduct, has the authority to solicit those applications. And they kept by past precedent. Another thing that we've always done is they came to the council after we choose the applicant. Like, no. So the applicants were chosen well before the end of the semester, well before this committee stopped the meeting, but the decoder key was not provided to the university assembly in time to present it as a resolution.
Because that's not the information that I have provided. So maybe I'm getting misinformation, but my understanding is that was provided as a decoder. By May 10th, anywhere from May 2nd to May 10th is what was said in Gina on the record last week at assembly said by Monday 9th. And so I don't know literally if somebody has the information, but that's what the Office of Assembly said to the UA last
week. I have a little bit of information. I believe our last meeting was May 8th. I don't really think correctly. In essence, it was around the first week of May. I believe, I'm pretty sure May 8th was our last meeting. So I can kind of offer that information. In terms of past precedent, the CAC is many here. Actually, I was still here. We used to not do them anonymized. We chose to anonymize them. And last year, there was a discussion over what the committee's intent was. And in essence, did we have the authority? And eventually, it was all straightened out. And we were all on the same page now. But that delay took nearly a month.
Last year,
it was me. It was me. Okay. Thank you.
The Office of the Assembly has provided the names a little less than 3 weeks left in the assembly term, but after the final official meeting.
I believe it may have come the day of or the day before. It was either really close to early.
I just want to reiterate, see if I understand correctly. So the applications were reviewed, all the processes were followed for selecting applicants. They were identified by number, not a name. the numbers were submitted, but the names were not. And the UA wouldn't act until they got the names.
That is correct.
So it sounds like more of a process issue. There's no, I mean, everybody's both technically correct, right? So what, if we're gonna resolve this, how do we resolve this? It bears, bear in mind that, you know, that the names were submitted in a time, or the processes were completed in a timely fashion and were present in the time frame suggested. It was but for this last glitch of knowing what number was what name and officially naming them. So is there harm done in expediting this process and saying, no, that was a legitimate process that the last meeting could have gone through if they weren't waiting for the names, or did go through, or could, I'm not even clear if they did vote on the numbers or nominate. But could this just be kind of restarted?
What do you mean by restarted?
Well, we're waiting to see if these folks can be appointed, am I correct, or we're starting over?
Functionally, this committee is deciding whether or not they can be appointed. Because of the University Assembly's executive committee stance on refusing to make emergency appointments for the year, those seats would remain vacant until the spring process starts again. So they would remain vacant for the remainder of the 2018-2019 academic year.
Yeah, I see that. The emergency appointment is only because we couldn't reconcile names and numbers. It's not because the process wasn't completed. So that, to me, that's like, if I misspelled someone's name, I'm not going to prevent them from being appointed, and I just misspelled them by a lot of different numbers. I mean, they are attached. Those numbers are uniquely attached to an application. They're not randomly attached. You can identify who was nominated. It's more of a cross-checking. Yeah, technical. Thank you.
So I have a lot of notes. I can talk a lot of this. I think, yeah, this point is exactly spot on. It's not perfect. We've rewritten UA bylaws to ensure this process starts very, very much earlier. Our goal is to start early last year in March. Our bylaws obviously should start in February. This has happened historically more than I would like. For the UA, we change our bylaws to really make sure this is not happening in the future. In terms of past precedent, unfortunately, I mean, I do agree that it's past precedent is not always indicative of what should be done. And I think as we try to edit this many times, it's important. So when we look at those pointlessly, I think we are going to do this here. This is an area that needs to be cleaned up. In terms of Michelle's interpretation, I think a lot of it also comes down to the words on the page in terms of the vacancy provision. There are no limitations on when that vacancy provision goes in. I will really concede it's poorly drafted. But the intent, it's meant to be a check that's not written on the page. And that's really, it's hard because even if you look at that rationale, some members of the board, and to be fair, the information I was given from the Office of the Assemblies, the most recent roster I received, which I would defer to them to say the most maintained amount, was 8 of 20 students, 8 of 15 staff, 7 of 15 faculty, about half, just a tad under half strength, depending where you look. And if this rationale is true, then arguably the people who are additional people appointed with UAR 1 last year, their appointments also have problems, which would take those who are still serving to take the board down even further. So I think there's a certain point where we need to, it's an area we need to look at, but I think we need to expedite this because there's a point where it's in the candidate, we can do that. And also, in theory, CDC could renominate them. There's no reason, there's nothing saying the CDC could not renominate them for a term that's retroactive. Again, was it great practice? Absolutely not. The code isn't prohibited. And this is an area where, again, our drafting needs to be tightened up. But there's a point where I think we really need to be able to move forward. And that's why you may make it maybe think we need to move forward, or is that a discussion staff more effective? Is how we need to move forward. That's why we're hoping that we can get this through.
So just a few questions and a point. So when is the UA for the term for the next year actually start? Is it the
university?
Yeah, the UA.
It's June 1st.
So
it's June 1st to make sense.
So by that logic, could the UA last year have sent down a resolution and had a vote or an emergency meeting to vote?
They could have, theoretically. But it doesn't usually happen because of the number of constituencies that you need to get to that room. Every undergraduate student is going to take exams. It's not usual for the UA to be active.
And then second question is, theoretically, could the UA vote on the numbers instead of, like, without the names? Is that against?
So, technically, no. The UA, I mean, because there's cabinets that they do correspond to different people. The reason that we don't do that historically has been because of the notice function. You put the names out publicly, so if you have 2 weeks, a month, however long, for someone to sit down and say, I think John Doe or Jane Doe is a horrible person, they've done these horrible things, people may come out of the woodwork. Historically, I mean,
never.
Historically, at Cornell, because that, to my knowledge, has happened there very rarely or never at all. But it's also why in emergency meeting and check logistics, since there's a notice function of these are probably, these are a 2 year term, removing them, it can be done, it's done very infrequently at all. We want to publicly notify so people can see it.
So does it delay once they're once they're named before they're actually in office is the intent?
Well, the delay between the named and voted and confirmed. So the term of office is not, I mean, the term of office is a bit applied to that. It's really, I'd say day one, you say the names out, day 14, 15, 28, whatever. After there's been time for someone to come forward, then you're going to
vote.
To pick up on what Kathy was saying, it seems to me that, and I totally understand what Michelle is saying in terms of the reading of the rules, but it seems like the spirit of the rules is primarily to have a legitimate process where you get people vetted, Matt talked about. And also just reading this, one of the things I thought about when Matt was talking was, he said, well, I suppose we just renominate these people. So that would actually technically fit within this. This doesn't say that the university assembly will only vote once per year. If you're really going to be technical, I mean, it's probably just the idea is to do it once a year, but it doesn't say that. So it seems to me that that would be permissible, but not necessary. I mean, I think that given that it looks like it was an unfortunate technical problem, and maybe a change, I don't know. Whatever happens, it seems to me that it's appropriate to go ahead and just pass this resolution and looking towards adjusting those time periods is appropriate as well, but that's for the future.
And I think approving things retroactive always seems a little bit disingenuous to me. So I think when we're talking about that vetting period, you just removed 25% of the population who would have been seniors who would have had feedback on people's names would be provided. And so we talk about the transparency of the process. I don't know if retroactive appointments make sense. I also think when we're talking about, you know, thinking that just because we're doing a different process now means all the people who were appointed by resolution one last year would have to be removed. I don't think that is. That would be saying that every decision that Mary Beth Grant made as the JA would have to be removed because we didn't follow the exact process in the cut, right? That's not you learn and you make better decisions once you realize the mistake that was brought to the attention. So now that we're at notice that we had been following procedures, I think the impetus on us is to encourage faith in the system, say we're following as a plaintiff. And so I share your idea about the idea that you want this campus feedback, and that's why we publish the names and things of that nature. And so there were resolutions that were passed all the way till the end of May. And so I think there were options. My understanding is those were done by electronic communications and things of that nature. And, I think that we're looking at the actual language of it, where it's confirmation no later than the last regular meeting of the assembly. That's the time frame. I don't need to choose the time frames in the code, which I would love to be able to say, okay, it's not 2 business days, it's 5 business days because we got a holiday coming up and the students will be checking their email. But that's where we're at.
I don't know if this is a plain order. I need to get better on the Robert tools, but can I just ask Michelle a question to clarify one? Is that a point of information?
Okay. I would be directing it.
Is that a point of information? Okay.
Yeah.
Michelle, do you think that it's permissible for the CJC to simply not renominate these people without it being retroactive, but starting whenever whatever the UA votes on it?
That I think is a little less clear on. I don't have as deep a perspective, but again, I think that the timeline that they have is that the last meeting of the outgoing UA occurred May 31st. And when it talks about when the term is starting, it's talking about June 1st when the term starts. So again, I think if you're reading it as a check and a balance, then I think that this CJC and UA could appoint as many people as they want for the 2020 hearing boards. Mm-hmm. But if you're saying that you want to renominate these people for the 2019 year, then I think you're creating a retroactive resolution. So I do see that. The fact that it's talking about very specifically the last outgoing meeting, I think there's some use that.
Let me ask a question about 3B. You implied that you would consider to only refer to vacancies that are caused by somebody who was appointed to the board and then vacated that seat for whatever reason, as opposed to a seat that started vacant on June 1st. How would the CJC and the University Assembly act to officially fill such a vacancy? What would be the procedure in that in your interpretation?
Yeah. So where it talks about, so when I look at the part that is number three. So the drafting. So you're looking at 1, 2, 3 being separate provisions. And so one talks about the pool, 2 saying, you know, talking about if you have a pool and then you think of people who you want to nominate as members, that's what starts to modify that. This is an exclusionary clause. And then 3 talks about when somebody is a member, here's what their requirements are. And so because 3 doesn't talk about the emergency appointment, it only refers to it, and then you go to the closest place that it refers to it. And that's where it says the University Assembly may make emergency appointments. So for drafting, that last line of 1 should really be 3, but it's not, it's really drafted provision. And so I think that it's not talking about pools in 3, it's talking about one someone's actually a member. And so that's how I think that, how I see that.
And so how, so that person you're saying, if they were to be nominated between June 1st and December 31st and 2019 board, they would have to be nominated by
and that was historically how it happened. And so examples of the past where I talked with Jane and Jim in our office, where women were to put in 3 years. They talked about summer appointments. So a lot of times, an RA is appointed by the emergency UA executive committee at the here in case that involves something that I want to share with the summer. So we'll be able to not be the full for that.
I will touch on this, but that's going to put us in a bit of a bind because the executive committee has announced they are not going to fill any vacancies. And if this.
I understood they weren't going to fill them for a full year, but they'd be willing to fill them on a temporary basis. Not like
that. I think we can speak that over time.
Are the executive committee, because we don't worry, we're not the bad guys in this. What I will say though is, we think that code is clear, we have the authority. I mentioned the speaker list, I will go into more detail about that. Oh, it is, wait, okay. I think, to Michelle's comment about drafting, I think part of it is, it could, maybe it should have been put in clause 1, but it was put in clause 3. And I can only move the words on the page again. And I think also the retroactive confirmation, that historically was also done as a form of blessing of the UA executive committee actions. Additionally, the UA executive, when we take emergency action, we ask the UA to either tell us that they agree or disagree. The retroactivity is more or less the UA is blessing the emergency appointments. So if we get the, if this is the sticking point, we can certainly remove it. And right now, the emergency appointments are structured in such a way that they are until the UA acts formally upon this. So is that further structuring? Possibly not. But we can certainly have those. And I was going to terminate a moment, a day, or however long before the formal vote to ensure that this is not retroactive. It was more of a formal blessing of prior actions. Again, the idea that this really should be done by the Assembly and not just the executive committee, unless it's absolutely necessary. And in terms of the, I think resolutions were not passed until the end of May, unless I missed something. I mean, there were resolutions that were conveyed to the President towards the end of May, and there were some other things that happened in that area. The resolutions were formally either agreed passed or agreed upon prior to the end of the term. If that is my understanding, I prefer to be confident and concerned in that area. But I really, it comes down to in terms of the notice and the we're on notice, we're not following the code. I respect and disagree. I think that the code is ambiguous here. And I think it's important that we need to look at the changes we have with changing this. But in essence, I think there is an interpretation. Again, to the, oh, we can only renounce the 2020 year, respectfully, that's not written anywhere. There's a certain point where we are, I respectfully argue that something that Michelle is reading something in or reading other things out. The words of the page are poorly written. I will fully concede that. But I believe that we do have the authority on the words of the page. I think we need to come on us to fix this. And I think the UA bylaws and the attendance committee show a very strong intent to deal with this. But I think at this present time, the code has the authority. Here is the authority. At least there are multiple plausible interpretations that we read to give the code this authority versus taking people, again, whether it's half, just under half or just over half. I think this committee has to choose its interpretation. The UA committee is on the mindset similar to myself, and that we have this authority and that we have members who are willing to serve. Actually, for what it's worth, I heard from one of the members who doesn't have an emergency appointment that she was almost staffed for a hearing, which I will talk to that is fine. But we have members who are willing to serve, people who are willing to be trained. Some of them are also renewals, and they want to continue serving. And we think it is, I mean, because there are plausible interpretations that they should be allowed to serve. And then we should look at this in the future. We have to get steps to do that.
So, Michelle?
The last thing I'm the same thing like that, but the university assembly didn't have any concerns with passing resolution when they didn't see a text. So, for example, the code resolutions were not presented to the UA in text. And so, when we talk about transparency in the process, I don't know why the UA couldn't have approved the numbers. There was no concern about not having transparency for the code amendments, which I think are just as important.
I would say, point of order, you can't start that.
When were the numbers, what was the gap between the numbers being sent to the University Assembly and the code?
I don't know the exact timeline, but it was a fairly extensive period where the University Assembly had to act to the point where they sent a verbal resolution of communication to Joel Molina, the director of the Vice President of University Relations, requesting that he direct the Office of the Assemblies to provide the decoder key because they were taking such a long period.
Because it seems to me that that's a relevant consideration, that if there was a delay caused by an office that the CJC had no control over and the UA had no control over, that this is a matter of sort of equity for the people who were nominated, they went through the whole process, that if the delay was caused by an office that should have provided this information, that that office created a problem. It doesn't seem to me that the nominee should have to pay for that by not being able to serve. And it doesn't seem to me that the UA should, you know, be blocked from taking what seems to be a reasonable approach. Seems consistent with what's been done in the past. So I'm a bit concerned with just allowing sort of a, either whether it was an issue of competence or whether it was an issue of people being too busy or whatever it was, that a delay in all of this shouldn't cause all of this thing, all of this to just fall apart.
Yeah, I'd actually agree with that too. But one thing that I think we should clarify if we do take that idea is to clarify in the resolution that due to a procedural error, I'm not sure if that's already is clarified, but make sure that it's
by law. We can change it.
Due to administrative delays, this was necessitated, not that it's just due to administrative delays that it was late. Just say that, specifically, that this problem caused this to need to happen. Because in the end, it's both the nominees and the student body that suffers from not having a fully set HRB. So,
simple to formally amend that.
Yeah. I'll come up with the language and do it first.
Yeah.
So, first off, the UA had the language of the code in front of them. They knew what they were changing the code. At the time, we were not sure yet how to word it, because there was a lot of timing going on. But the UA saw all the changes at multiple meetings and knew what they were changing the code. That is, they not going on code mode without seeing what they were. So the record reflects that as well. In terms of Catherine's point, I mean, I think a lot of it is, I don't disagree. I mean, we tend to try not to publicly say negative things about those who work with. I'll be honest, the UA, I can fully exactly it because we'd like me to. We met to look at the selection, well, with more than enough time. I want to say before spring break. I can check it exactly, but it was early enough, well, more than early enough for us to have received the decoder, have the standard procedure followed and with no issues in timing. We got into a very strong disagreement with the Office of the Assemblies about could we see the decoder key? Because we wanted to see, we had our selection, the members of the selection committee had agreed on it, told the CJC what we had done. And then they said, we want to see the key, and then we can make the resolution. The Office of the Assemblies did not agree with that, said that we had to send them the numbers. The committee at the time, those who were present, as well as the executive committee, said, no, it's the data is ours. We choose to anonymize, we can choose to be anonymized. We had to get our disagreement. It was heated, that was created and met. And it resulted in Dale said in the UA going to the vice president of university relations Bill, and then asking him to direct the office to give us the key. By the time that all went through, so much time had elapsed, and we finally got the key. And I will note that there was a technical not in compliance with our request. I don't want to say that in the resolution because it was resolved. And this year, I think there's been a marked improvement in our relationship. If necessary, we can put it in there. But that delay is what causes it to become late. So that's really why we got pushed down our timeline. It was unfortunate. I don't think it's going to happen again. Folks' assurances after talking to the office and our change of procedures. And again, I'd rather not bash the public, but that is what caused the delay. And that is why we were late doing this. That's why we're here now.
I wasn't trying to bash them publicly. I was just saying that, like, the fact that this occurred necessitates that there needs to be an appropriate means to prepare the problem that's caused.
Of course, I wasn't implying you are. I'm saying that the reason the language is work, the reason we tried to word the language a little more, it's trying to be a little more work. Right? We feel the committee feels it's more important. I think that's just my opinion.
With that, the speakers listed exhausted. Anyone else?
Well, I don't need to throw a motion or whatever it is in the but I think all the reasoning works very well based on those who submitted, but there's also information here that the dean of the university faculty nominated additional faculty members over the assembly's summer recess. Mm-hmm. So is that a different issue? I don't understand how that works.
That is a different process because the dean of faculty nominates faculty members to the board. They don't
so
go through the application process.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly it. So there was Professor Susan Briganess and Professor Hillary Drinkwater. I am Professor Briganess is a professor of mine. I hadn't had her prior to this year, but I have two classes with her now. But they were nominated towards the end of the summer, I want to say around August, when their letters came through. I remember there was some confusion over that they'd be seated immediately. Of course, I replied to the Office of the Assembly saying they're nominated, they must be confirmed prior to getting seated. The UA committee discussed, should we give an emergency appointment? Time is that we're more than fully staffed, we can wait to have this done formally, which is why the resolution has footnotes under after the name saying they weren't given emergency appointments because they didn't need to be.
Okay. Right.
Actually, they didn't need, the committee chose not to because of the time.
Okay.
With that, the speakers are
okay, what information? After, are you still working on language?
Yeah.
Okay, then I would motion to, or get to take 5 minute recess, get some food, and take a break so we can finish that, and then come back.
If there's no dissent, I think you should go for 5 minute pizza recess.
Okay.
That's Pop John's for you. Okay, that's really good.
They do. Last year, actually, before when I was coming back, I was driving back on a Wednesday morning. I thought, could I buy pizza in Buffalo and bring it here for the meeting? And I said it wouldn't have worked. And I said, the timing, but I'm thinking it would have been a great, because I always say, I'll bring Buffalo pizzas. I'm like, we actually get some to bring it back.
What's the name of the day?
Sorrentino's.
I remember someone famous.
There's two that are really good.
Tried La Hacienda's pizza. Have you ever had it? It was voted apparently best in Buffalo a few years ago.
I can't say I have to try that.
It was very good. It was like the best Buffalo pizza I've had. Yeah.
My grandparents used to own a pizzeria. So I have my family, we're the maker of pizza. Actually, technically, Sorrentino is owned by my cousin's family. And my really, really good friend, Gino's Pizzeria, is also owned by a really close friend of our family. And my grandparents still have their own pizza recipe. So I never actually had Papa John's until I came.
Oh, you're really surprised.
Neither am I.
And I've been thinking, look at this, is good pizza. And I'm thinking, oh, gosh.
I want to say
the Buffalo is because they have the brown pepper on it.
Is that like the quintessential?
So they have like it's like the pepperoni that pop up.
Yeah.
They're really together. They're a little spicier. They're very common. More common Buffalo. I really haven't had a pizza outside of Buffalo.
Right. Yeah. I apologize. Your standard's faulty.
No, it's more pepper milk inside the dime.
No worries.
And they heat up and they turn it hot. They turn like a.
And I got that pizza. I told you.
The picture. It's a storm pepper, and you can see when it gets cooked, it turns into little cups, so it pops out. So it's a little spicier, but it's, I personally really like it.
I'm
I know she plans to take some cats. So I will. She's very interested in starting to do a lot of. She's appointed, but she needs a vet. We want to do a little service. I'm not sure of that.
She is now. We set up on the first.
Oh gosh, that was slow.
So Ashwin can propose an amendment. We can go into discussion.
I'd be very happy to request that
she voted up or down.
That looks delicious.
I have 4:45 to sit.
You're making me jealous because I have that piece over there.
We could start.
It's a chunky and it's, oh yes, it's. Mm-hmm. It's fresh mozzarella. I'm not a fan of ricotta on my stuff. And everyone was crazy when I say we're both on Zidane Cop. I'm like, we need
yes. Yeah, I think
that looks delicious. I for many years, I didn't know people didn't eat those until I got to Cornell. I'm like, wait a minute, you don't?
You don't want to?
Yeah.
Okay, now it's corn egg and ethic. I think the best pizza is the last greenhouse. And it's their green pizza. It's their popcorn pizza. And it's got an unusual crust. It's a lot of this country. And their top, I think, would have had some spinach. So it's Italian. So they just want to sell through the main.
It's a really interesting flavor. I might have to go there.
It is.
I'm going to write a note because I don't
know.
With that, our 5 minute recess has been exhausted. I believe Ashwin was about to propose the amendment.
Right, so it's a bit wordy. We can definitely cut it down. But to replace lines 11 through 13, a motion to amend those lines to, whereas due to procedural delays in that process, the nominees were recommended in a timely fashion, but were not ultimately appointed to the UHRB in the academic year 2017 to 2018. And next, whereas clause, whereas the executive committee of the University Assembly authorized the appointment of individuals on a temporary basis to the UHRB until such time as the full assembly could confirm them. And third clause, whereas due to such procedural delays, the UHRB would be left at half strength without confirmation of the individuals timely nominated in the academic year 2017 to 2018. And then, yeah.
Is there a second to discussing that?
Second. I don't think it's that wordy. Because you've broken the three whereas clauses. The only comment I might have is I want to know, I'd say approximately half strength, just because I should get a roster.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, so I would just ask a motion to amend the amendment. So it's
Is there no dissent to including the word approximately?
Yes.
But that, the word
after that, I think it says that it breaks the whereas clause up, but I don't think.
Whereas due to such procedural delays, the UHRB would be left at approximately half strength without confirmation of the individuals finally nominated in the academic year 2017.
Wordy means different things, but I don't think.
Now, procedural question, Margaret, what's the best way for us? Should we send out a listserv and have them just send you back?
Yeah, I can just get it from you after the meeting. Okay. That's fine. Thank you.
That is there any discussion or debate on that amendment? Is there a motion to approve that amendment?
Okay.
A second.
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor of including that language in the resolution? All those opposed? All abstentions? 5-0 to 5-0.
I don't know.
Okay,
never mind. Yeah,
go for it.
5-0.
Now, is there anyone else who would like to discuss the resolution as a whole?
Motion to vote on the resolution as amended.
Is there a second on that motion? Oh, do you have a...
No, she's going to say it.
Oh, okay. I will draw the motion for that.
It has been so moved and seconded. All of those in favor of passing this resolution with the amended language, which is therefore the nomination to the University Assembly, please the resolution for the All of those opposed? All abstentions. By a vote of 5-0-1, these names have been denominated to the University Assembly for their confirmation. Before we move on to the next agenda item, is there anybody who would like to make any comments on that resolution? All right. The next agenda item I had, I didn't realize the final report was not quite ready yet. Would you like to make any comments on the final report of the COVID change?
I'm only to say, at least that, I mean, maybe Matt, as I told you last time, that in this case, the subcommittee, the working group, got together, did the finalizing, putting together what we'd already done. It had already been put together, but it was just sort of the final run through. And we expect that the report will be publicly issued within the next week or so. Yeah. So it's almost.
Would you want to present that report to the University Assembly on Tuesday?
I don't know.
So that's the next time the University Assembly.
What, I mean, is it this coming Tuesday?
It is this coming Tuesday. We have to discuss. I don't know if the chair can have the agenda for that.
Well, I think the question is just the physical act of is it really ready for.
And I think it would probably be best for the senior CEO to review it in the week after.
Yeah, that seems to make no sense to me. If you look at it
Michelle?
Yeah, I'm trying to just as from the previous, trying to think about the amount of something that this is. Yeah. Are there any recommended timelines or timeframes to sit it out?
There's nothing in the report that says, you know, by this time you should do X, Y, or Z. I think the hope is that, you know, that there are some things that can be done quickly. And as you'll see, and as I've mentioned, a lot of what we recommend is overlapping with what's already been recommended by the members of the Presidential Task Force. And so there's a, you know, positive aspect of this, a mutually reinforcing aspect of it. So some of those things are already happening. So that's a long answer to your question. I think the short answer is just no, I don't think there's anything we would say, okay, this is really going to be pressing on the CJC to do it right away. But I think some of our recommendations are just to discuss, you know, the concept and present the last time. I think some of them, you know, may be things that fit nicely into the work that's already going to be done, just the code and consultation. I think it'll just sort of happen in a timely fashion that makes sense.
Yeah. There's something that we present here in the building thing, and there are guests who are the vice president of intellectual property and finally that title may change, but that's the reason that's the president. Aqua 16 is the next meeting, which is also in President Paul for the rest of the week. Right. So it makes the quiz deadline fortuitous if the presentation were to be the president, we could certainly schedule it to do some overlap with the president when he's in part of the report to get the first paper that he'd like. That's obviously the availability of the line, but that is the U.S. calendar. Up until then, we're still trying to book that, so that's what they're going to be.
You know, for the world clock time, the president will be presenting to the U.S.?
Yes, the UA begins at 4:30, yeah, and the president will be arriving for thereabouts. We asked for a site to settle in first, and not right at the beginning, but we can certainly amend the agenda. And if you want to have some overlap as well, we can do that. I can certainly talk to you later about making that possible.
Anybody else like that? With that, we've reached the adjournment section of the agenda. We will, oh, sure.
Sorry, can I just not add a point of information? With the Presidential Task Force and this committee kind of coming with some recommendations and things like that, which I assume there's a lot of overlap based on what you shared with us, I want to know what the timeline is. We're already coming close to fall break, and doing a whole code revision is going to take a little bit of time. And I just want to know if there's the expectation for this committee to be doing researching. I have some benchmarking that the previous University Hearing Board members have done under the admin chair, but I'm just trying to figure out if there's a plan in place for us, because I don't want this to be just on you as the chair, but we want to be working with new members too.
I think we do not have an immediate plan right now. Matt and I were planning to present the proposed timetable to the committee for the committee to discuss the next meeting. By that time, we'll have the final report from the working group. I'm hoping still that I can pass this on to you, the president, can give us a little bit more of a specific set of public recommendations for what we should consider. Because the public recommendations that have been posted right now are generic. They kind of like look at these issues, and the more specific recommendations I know were private communication to you.
I have some that I will have.
And so at that point, at the next meeting, we will have all those in specificity. The chair of the University Assembly and I will present a plan. Right now, I think what we're looking at is having draft language for many of these changes by the end of the semester, not to be formally proposed to the presidential administration, to President Pollack, but be sent to her administration to review over the winter break so that we can start the second semester and actually hopefully develop language that the president will be going to.
Does this have to do with housekeeping? Because my understanding is that the community is really good talking about the code provision.
That is what we're discussing.
Okay, so it's going to be changing the whole language of the code.
Well, that's what we're going to have to discuss, where it goes into an overall code overhaul. I don't know about that, but definitely to tackle the housekeeping changes that we have not been able to get through. And the recommendations of the working group and her task force. A code revision might work along with both of those. That could mean rewriting the whole code, which means that we're going to need a lot more outside help. Those of us in this room cannot do that on our own. We're not qualified. That's not what should be done. That would not be transparent. Or it might be something of a different form where we do work on reorganization and clarification of the code and not necessarily, you know, restart and rewrite the entire document.
And just in a minute, I saw that President mentioned Brown's code of conduct. Brown's actually overhauling their entire code of conduct, they just like it. Yeah. So just as you're benchmarking, and Brown is the place, they actually spent the whole year revising it. So
do you know why they didn't do that thing?
Because it's too judicial.
It's too
judicial. And it's not fitting the guidelines. So like the context of their administration are available on their website, but
it is on that. My understanding was it was more, is an example of how to make the language more approachable. Ours being more judicial or not, I think that's getting a much larger conversation of how we want this to work. I know with the increased focus on alternative resolutions, there is an option for if respondents so choose to move towards more of that. But I don't know personally, and I think we have a much larger discussion in terms of. If we were going to start removing substantive rights and some of the procedural protections that are there, it's one thing to have someone voluntarily say, I'd like to do mediation, or I'd like to waive things. It's in my estimation, another to say, we're going to remove that as an option for someone. And I think that would be a much harder conversation. Instead of saying, if an individual so desires, it can go through this process and just waive and do different things versus taking it away from someone.
Mediation doesn't waive, right?
No, I'm sorry. What I meant to clarify, if someone were to say, I'd rather go to mediation than a full hearing board. In essence, you give people choices, not waiving the rights, but if someone chose it, I'd rather go to mediation or take process in SDA versus a hearing, instead of forcing people into a hearing or an SDA, they can go to mediation where they would reach a negotiated SDA, which from my understanding last year, people were very happy with.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something in line with this discussion, and that is, as you'll see when you see the report, that's coming out of our working group on hate speech and harassment, there are some recommendations for very specific changes in the code. And we also note in there areas where we do not overlap with some of the recommendations from the Presidential Task Force. For example, there's a recommendation from the subcommittee on it, which it was called
Regulation of Speech and Harassment.
Yeah. They have a recommendation to move parts of the, the ADR kind of things, alternative dispute resolution kind of things, so we can have student's office, right? Yeah. And so we don't take a position on that. We didn't discuss it. We don't take a position on it. And so we tried to note places where either we didn't agree or where we just don't actually address the same points. So I think that. With this committee, I think Michelle's idea of doing, you know, some kind of timeline marking would be a really good idea. But I also think that there are some real philosophical kinds of questions that this committee has to address along the lines of, do we want to do changes that kind of streamline the code, clarify certain things, fix certain things right away? One of the things we recommend in our working group report for guidances to be added as appendices to the code so that it can explain the code more. You know, so I think that my sense of what the work is that we have to do is that the timeline is important, but that it will come after we have, you know, what the timeline would be, we'll have a better sense of it after we know actually what we want to do. An overhaul is a very different thing from a complete overhaul. Is very different thing from streamlining and clarifying. Is my sense of it.
On that note, do you think the report would be able to be given to the committee members before the fall break, so that when we meet that Wednesday, we'll be able to go into that discussion already of what we want to do?
Well, yeah, it sounds like it is.
Because I feel like the people in this room, if we are going to advocate on that,
right.
We don't want to waste any time.
Yeah, this is strictly logistics of getting that. I mean, it's done. Right,
okay.
It's just a little bit of looking at somebody who's helping me with the logistical stuff.
Yeah, so pretty you know, like we are, it's just in terms of, we can, I think it's possible, more feasible. If there is, like, just get a text that might not be quite so pretty.
That's,
but okay. I think in terms of before the break, that should be.
And just in response as the chair of this committee, if you have any recommendations about a schedule you think we should be following, I think those of us who were here last year saw that this committee can often. Fail making changes to the code. We don't want that happening again this year.
come up with an executive session. Sorry, I need to understand. I was in the executive session. Last week to talk about the mindset. But I think there's this right that we're going to have some philosophical questions. I think the three main questions that are this committee should really be thinking about is, does the code of conduct include just faculty, staff, students, or is it just a student code? I think all three task force mentioned pre-plug. I think that is something that this, I think that's probably going to be a low-hanging fruit for us.
Yeah, very low.
I think the standard proof is the third thing. I think this way you should really be thinking about as a stretching influence are more substantive or
unless they're approved. In my experience, I haven't met any students who have contemplated recently applying the MORIC. I've heard people actually some express support for it and saying, oh, what does it mean? Is there a way to add more feedback? I mean, I've heard in essence people saying, is there something in between beyond reasonable doubt and fair and convincing? I personally said, I don't know how feasible that is for a university system, but I have heard, some people saying, oh, is there a way to add more protection? At this point, I think there are people, and I have met the people on the other side as well, but I think it's.
That is the main thing that would like to be for future.
So, who's the first thing?
Whether the code should be faculty, staff, and students, or just students.
And I was right. All right, we'll see you all in Wednesday after program.
I am. I'm not.
Awesome.